And I see these guys going door to door selling coal. And I was like, that looks like an easy business. So I go to the wholesalers and I say, how much is a ton of coal? And it's so much. I say, okay, so you buy the coal, you sell the coal, you make €4 a bag. Surely to God, you sell 100, 200 bags a day. That's 405. You'd make a couple of grand a week at that, wouldn't you? No problem. I was rejected basically 554 times. I sold one bag of coal. Now, anybody in the right mind would just give up. But I didn't. And 5 years later, I had taken most of Tyrellin. So I ended up with the biggest coal business in Galway.
2025, Steeltech, what's happening?
Right now, it's modular homes. You know, okay. That's such an exciting place to be because we're at them now 7-8 years. You know, we're doing 4 or 5 a week at the moment.
A week?
Yeah, we'd love to get that up to 100. See, you know, I was out for dinner with my young lads there just after Christmas and the oldest lad said, I know, Dad, you're going to love this question. He was like, what advice would you give your 30-year-old son? I said, just this one thing. If you could not care what other people think about you, your life would be so much happier, better, successful. But you don't care.
It takes courage and belief in yourself and your business idea to take the step to set up your own business. In the early stages, entrepreneurship can be a lonely road, even through those milestone moments. Deciding to commit to the idea you've been mulling over, learning, growing, and developing your skills, building a team to help you along the way, preparing to launch into new markets. Enterprise Ireland is there for all of those startup moments. From providing advice and guidance to new founders through our startup network, to pre-seed funding and early investment, we're here to help bring your ambition to fruition. To find out how Enterprise Ireland can help you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Nostra, an Irish IT company, offers world-class managed IT services, cloud solutions, IT support, and more, all tailored to meet your business needs. Whether you're streamlining operations or boosting productivity, their expert team is ready to help. Visit nostra.ie or email info@nostra.ie to see how they can solve your IT challenges today.
Before we dive into today's episode, I want to share a game changer for your business, Azure Communications. When it comes to print and marketing solutions, these folks, led by CEO Jenny Johnston, are the real deal. Whether you need an eye-catching brochure, sleek business cards, or a full-blown digital campaign, Azure Communications has you covered. They're not just about high-quality prints or digital campaigns, they're also about delivering great results. And here's the best part. Just for listeners of The Entrepreneur Experiment, you can get 20% off your first order. Just give them a call or go online and use the code VOX20. With personalized service and fast turnaround times, Azure Communications will help you make the impact your business deserves. Trust me, when it comes to making your brand stand out, Azure Communications is the provider of choice. Check them out at azurecom.ie. Use code VOX20 and elevate your marketing game today.
Sean, welcome to the pod.
Thanks, Gary. Great to be here.
It's brilliant to have you. Welcome to The Entrepreneur Experiment.
Yeah, so we have about an hour to solve the world problems.
I think we're going to get there. From our coffee earlier, I think we're going to get there. Yeah. Where should we start?
Well, there's housing, there's tariffs, and there's world hunger.
Let's start about the most exciting thing you're working on yourself at the minute. Yeah. What's the big thing that's getting you out of bed in the morning?
Every day I jump out of bed excited, and I probably have to say the most exciting thing potentially is working on myself, because I often say every day is a school day. And every day we learn something new, and everyone you meet knows something you don't know. So I love going into work, and there's always, you just don't know what the day holds. It's exciting.
What's the day to day for you? What's the main gig at the minute?
I made a New Year's resolution about 2 years ago to have a routine. Like most people make a New Year's resolution, go to the gym or something like that. So I said, have a routine. So I have done that successfully.
Okay.
So we get up in the morning, usually around 6:30, jump out of bed, 20 minutes exercise in front of YouTube, jumping around the place,
okay.
Loud music. I'm surprised the neighbors never give out. I have very understanding neighbors. I pumping the music and I'm jumping around the place for 20 minutes. I'll do that at least 6 days a week. Then I'll spend another, I have a home gym, so then I'll spend another 20 minutes doing weights.
Brilliant.
And I'm very fortunate to live in Salt Hill, so at least 4 or 5 days a week, I'll walk the pram and I'll go in for a quick dip as well. So
brilliant.
It's you do that and you're buzzing for the day.
Well, you're stacking those healthy habits.
It's and that's it, routine. And, you know, like, I don't enjoy it. You know, people enjoy the gym and enjoy it. I like, don't, I'm not pretending to enjoy it.
Do you not?
But
I love it.
Nobody ever felt worse after exercise. So that's my thing. I always feel better, and that's how my day starts.
It's in the head, isn't it? It's a head battle.
I just think you're energized. And then, you know, we'll do it. Myself and my partner will do the 20 minutes every morning, and then we'll sit down, have coffee for 15 minutes, nice and relaxed, and just have a chat. And yeah, it's a good start.
But it primes the day.
And I'm fortunate, you know, that I have great people around me, so I'm not working too hard.
Well, you're fortunate, but you've made it that way. Do you know what I mean? I think there's a lot of people kind of make excuses for kind of not doing things. At the minute, we're right in the middle, so we're recording this in April. I do these accountability challenges for listeners of the pod, right? So we have 113 people doing an accountability challenge at the minute. I was doing this myself anyway, and I threw it open, and people were like, geez, I'd love to do that with you. What are you doing? I'd post every day, accountability, gym, up at 6, whatever, up at 5, whatever it is. So April accountability, we're doing, you pick the set time you get up in the morning. So mine's 5 a.m., but it could be 6 a.m., 7 a.m., whatever works for you. Pick a set time, because that's meant to be extremely good for your circadian rhythm. He kind of gets your body primed. Your body knows what time it needs to get up, so it's going to bed at the right time. And then exercise for 30 minutes every day. That's it. Yeah. That's the low-hanging fruit, I say. If you do two of those things, the rest is easy. So we do that for every day in April. 30 minutes exercise, get up at the same time. And we have a WhatsApp group. You have to update the group. That's the accountability piece. You can't just lurk there.
Accountability is great, because now you don't want to let the team down.
Share a picture. Yeah. You know, we're not going to drag you to the gym, but share a picture. And like, it's just stacking those tiny wins, especially early in the day.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you say start a routine, were you not like that before?
No, I mean, you know, in the last 5 or 6 years, I've changed my lifestyle. I was probably drinking too much. And that's the thing, you know, I think alcohol consumption in Ireland is down something like 30% in the last 20 years. And I think it's education, the likes of yourself with your podcast, you know, because I listen to a lot of podcasts, and all of a sudden people are telling you, like I listened to one on Uberman, and I'm not a fan of Uberman. I find them a bit hard to listen to. But the one was on alcohol, and I was, oh my God.
It's eye-opening, isn't it?
It's so bad for you. It's like really, really bad for you. So
yeah, so it's quite literally poison.
It is. So yeah. If you went back 5 or 10 years, like I was drinking, like I wasn't just having one or two. I was drinking way too much. So my whole quality of life has improved. Now, I'm not anti-drink. Trust me, I love drink. There's nothing I'd prefer than a weekend on the beer with a few lads having a laugh. But the damage it's doing. So, yeah, it's a game changer.
It's the ripple effect, isn't it? It's not just a few pints and then you're a bit tired the next day. It's the ripple effect into how you feel the next day, what you do, what you eat. And then into the second day as you get older. It used to be like you'd bounce out of bed. You'd be 21. You'd had a feed of pints the night before. You'd bounce out of bed. You'd be a bit groggy for an hour. Coffee, grand. Now you, Jesus, like, I can't do it anymore. It just hits me too hard. I couldn't.
Yeah, no problem. And I come to that. So were you out last night? Yeah. And were you drinking? Yeah. How many drinks did you have? Jesus, well, 4 or 5 pints. And then I went on the vodka and Red Bull. I might have had a few. Yeah, maybe a few more pints. It was a double and a triple vodka and Red Bull. And I was like, and you're okay? Yeah, fine, yeah.
That's the killer, because you were able to get away with it. That's the real thing.
And that's what I say. It was a lack of education. And now we have all this, you know, there's such an emphasis on health. And nowadays, it's everybody, the whole world. I have 3 sons, and I can't believe, like, they're my sons at all. They're so sensible. Like,
Where did I go wrong?
Yeah, I went on holidays with the 3 lads, like, and they wouldn't go to the pub one night. You know, it's like, it's the gym and it's exercise and it's, you know.
I love it. It's class. It's class.
That's it. Yeah, but they're right.
The younger generation just see it, because they've grown up. I was just thinking about this recently. I was wondering why. They've grown up with the examples of, like, they can see the truth now. They can see what's happening. They're able to, and they've good role models as well. The people are kind of going, oh, you look at that person. They're not boozing. They're actually getting up at 7 a.m. They're going to the gym. Look how well they look. Look how, like, seems to be the, how happier they are. And you see how mental health, how it impacts the mental health. It's chronic for it.
Yeah.
What was the change point for you?
Changing point, I suppose. It really was listening to podcasts, you know, that I'm just, because I was dyslexic, so I was never a person to read. So audiobooks, you know, for the last 15 years, probably audiobooks, and more recently podcasts. So the podcasts, I just love them. And it's just education. You know, and I often say education is lifelong learning. And I think I'm learning a lot more now than I was, you know, 40 years ago.
But isn't it amazing? We've access to anything now.
That's the thing.
If you're curious.
And I'm a very curious person, so I love learning. And it's so interesting. We were in Vietnam on holidays there recently, and the history of Vietnam is amazing. You know, and I said, wow, this is fantastic. And yeah, and then I thought back when I was learning history in school, I just hated it. Because the way they were teaching is you have to do this and you have an exam, and it's like, but when you're learning something that you want to learn and it's interesting, that's when you enjoy it. And the wonderful thing now with you know, the iPhone is only around about 15 years, you know, and now you have access to everything. Now you have ChatGPT. So I could be driving to work in the morning, I'm having a conversation with ChatGPT, and it's just fantastic.
I'm the exact
same. And you can't make it angry, and you know, it's funny, like, I try and make it mad or something, and it's just brilliant.
But it's unbelievable. You've like the smartest person in the world as your pal in the car with you, and you're having a full-blown conversation about anything you want.
It's crazy.
I'll do it for ideas. Hey, ChatGPT, I have an idea for this. What do you think? Oh, yeah, that's good. I was like, make me a business plan for that.
Yeah, I did that over, we're in Lisbon there, because I said, maybe we'd live in Lisbon for the winter, because the winter, the weather is not great here. I could live anywhere now.
Good plan. Says,
let's go to Lisbon and let's pretend we're living there for a couple of weeks.
Love it.
And my partner gets up and, who are you talking to? I'm having a chat with ChatGPT, and I'm living in Lisbon for 6 months, and I just wonder what business. I don't want too much work. I like meeting people. So it's, what about dog walking? I says, I don't like dogs. Got that idea. Next was, well, what about a flower shop and selling plants? Oh, I like horticulture. Yeah. What else have you got? What about a coffee shop? And then we have a conversation about a coffee shop, and we're going to call it Coffee Chat. And then he's designed a logo for Coffee Chat. And the whole idea is that people chat when they come for coffee. And then, of course, we're opening a chain of coffee shops. But she gets up, who are you talking to? I says, my friend, ChatGPT, you know. So it's great.
It's class. Yeah. It's like, it just, you can kind of go, hey, I want to live in Malaga for 6 months. What do I need to know? And like that, you'd have to go to a relocation expert before, and then a lawyer to tell you the tax, and then this to tell you that. And I was like, hey, there you go. There's the easy thing. You're like, oh, that's kind of cool. Yeah, that sounds like it's doable. I think we're on the verge of, like, people are doom mongering AI, and they're also overblown it. But like, I think we're on the verge of something magic here. Like, I think we talked about earlier, like, the you know, the internet was first leap forward, then it's the smartphone, and now you're going to have AI and layering all those three together.
It is, and people forget. You know, I think young people, because they spend so much time on social media. And it's just natural, but because I'm 65, so I remember when there was, I can remember black and white TV, you know, so that's why I think I have an appreciation for all this information that we have in our hand. I just love it.
Yeah. That's what you do with it though, isn't it?
And it's, yeah, you could be listening to, I suppose, you know, it's like reading books 40 years ago, you could be reading fiction, nothing wrong with that, or you could be reading, you know, books that are teaching you something about business or whatever, because I just love entrepreneurship.
We've ultimate free will, though. We can literally choose to do. Yeah. Me and you were chatting this about over coffee. You've ultimate free will here, especially in Ireland. Like, you literally can do anything. You can go anywhere. You can create anything. You can start anything. That's why Ireland is one of the best places to start a business, because you're also one person away from meeting you or whoever you need to meet.
Yeah, and network is so important, and we're good at that in Ireland. We're really, really good at that.
I think we can get better. We can get better. Like, so I started doing these dinners and breakfasts for people who've been on the pod. And it's class. It's magic. The stuff that happens in those dinners and breakfasts, you're kind of going, this is just class. Like, to be able to, the stuff that happens, like something happened here a few weeks ago, and your man came up and gave me a hug, and I was like, what's that for? And he goes, that intro you did just changed our business. Yeah. I was like, Jesus, unbelievable. I like that ripple effect. That's why I love doing the pod as well, because we can sit here, we have great crack, we sit down for an hour, we do this pod, it's brilliant, me and you get something out of it, but then 10 people can listen, a million people can listen.
That's it, you know, and there's a friend of mine always going to networking events, and I'm like, Alan, I says, you might meet 10 people and you hand out business cards or whatever, but do a video or do something online, you're meeting 10,000 people.
That's it. Jesus, networking, like, people just approach it in this scattergun way, flicking out business cards like they're at poker, and I'm like, why are you giving me a business card? Sure, I haven't even talked to you. Like, I don't want your fucking business card. Like.
And LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn. It's easy to reach out to somebody on LinkedIn.
Yeah, really cool.
And you can reach out to anybody. You know, you could reach out to Elon Musk. You probably won't get a reply from Elon Musk. But
probably get it on Twitter, but it might be the reply you want.
Yeah. So you can literally reach out to anybody.
So how did you get going? How did you start in business? Clearly, you seem like a business addict. You seem like someone who loves it.
I just love it. And I suppose I mentioned dyslexia, but like having dyslexia in school, nowadays I know what that is, but 50 years ago when I was in school, they hadn't a clue. So I was the tickish person in the class as far as they were concerned. And throwing a bit of ADHD, I think ADHD is wonderful because it gives you more energy, you know. So I see these things now at this stage of my life as real positive things. So basically, I'm in school, I'm learning absolutely nothing.
What did it feel like for you in school?
It was horrible. You know, I can still clearly remember, like, you're being bullied in school because you're not able to keep up with everybody else. And the worst bully of all was the teacher. I can remember a teacher sending me out to get a stick so he could beat me with the stick, and he sent me back out again to get a bigger stick. Like, this is 50 years ago, 50, 60 years ago nearly. So it was not a nice environment, and I could not wait to get out of that school. So I left at 14.
Mm.
But I can now look back and say I left with 100% creativity, because what education does, and I'm a fan of education, like, it's wonderful, but it teaches people to do things a certain ways. Now, if you skip that, and I skipped most of it, the creativity is just there, like, so.
When you have to problem solve.
Well, now more than ever with AI and everything else, you know, AI is not great on the creativity side of things, you know, so. Whether it's writing a song, starting a business, or whatever you're doing, creativity is a fantastic skill to have. Mm. So I had that. I had that. Loads of it. I also had a determination, a ferocious determination to, like, when you're, I was brought up on a small farm, 15 acres of land, and there was no money, you know. And I think it's a Barbara Corcoran, she's one of the sharks in Shark Tank. She says, she invests all the time in people. And she says, show me someone from a poor background and they have a better chance of success. Show me someone from a poor background with a bit of trauma thrown in. And I love them. She says, they're great. You know, so.
That's her model.
Yeah. And what's your man? What's the NVIDIA CEO, Howard?
Oh, I know the guy you're talking about. Yeah, I can't think of his name.
Yeah. He was giving a talk in Stanford recently. And at the end of the talk, he was like, you know what? He says, you're some of the smartest people in America, and you're obviously financially secure where you're going to the best university in the world. Yeah. So when you leave, I wish you lots of pain and suffering.
I went super viral. I'm looking up the name as we're chatting here.
I wish you pain and suffering.
Jensen Huang. Yeah, CEO of NVIDIA.
But what an unusual thing to do. I wish you pain and suffering.
Yeah.
Because that is how you will learn resilience. You won't learn resilience in Stanford. You know, so resilience, I had that in spades.
What did you do?
There was only one thing motivating me, and that was make money, you know, because I wanted to make money. Because you're a young lad, you're a teenager, whatever, you want to meet the girls, whatever, you have a better chance of meeting a girl if you have a nice car, you know. So I need money to buy that car, you know. And the word entrepreneurship did not exist at all. There was only one thing, how can I make money, you know. So, and I was good at it.
What'd you start with?
I was wheeling and dealing, you know, I mean, buying and selling car accessories. I started working in a garage when I was 14, so I spent 2 years at that. And then at 15, I had my first car. You know, and there was no driving lessons. I bought the car off this guy, and he brought me to the edge of town and let me off. You know,
no way.
I hit the ditch a few times on the way home. And then I'm buying and selling. Back then, it was all kinds of car accessories. Then I had a stall on the street selling plants, shrubs, and trees. Then I was selling everything from policemen's coats to bedspreads. You know, I was selling everything on stalls on the streets.
Where is this, Galway?
This was, I was living in Ballinan. I'm from Ballinan, County Mayo. So you went to the whatever town there was a market on, and you just set up a stall. And that's, you really learn.
I did the same.
Did you?
I did the Sunday markets for, Jesus, years.
It's so much fun.
I used to do phones. I used to do like phone unlock and phone screen replacement, microphones replacement, phone covers. Remember the Nokias with the phone covers?
That's right,
I put myself through college on phone covers.
Yeah.
I learned more. Like, I used to work in a phone shop, and I learned more from the phone shop and the market than I did from probably any college. Because you learn everything, stock management, pricing, leverage, arbitrage.
Yeah, it's hard to learn that stuff in college.
I was buying stuff from the UK and China and all that kind of stuff. And you just learn. You learn what works. You learn taste. You learn customer behavior. You learn sentiment. You know what sells. You know what doesn't sell. What's hot, what's not. Because you're seeing it every single Sunday going, geez, they're not shifting at all. Get rid of them, in with this, that's the hot new thing, out it goes. It just teaches you everything you need to know, really.
And sales, you know, I often say in business, I think the one thing you need to understand, whatever the business, is sales, because every business relies on selling a product or a service. So a customer service and how to sell the product or the service or whatever it is, I think you need to know that one thing. Everything else, you can get someone else to do it, you can figure it out, but sales, and learning how to sell.
And sales has had a bad rep because it was kind of sleazy and cheesy. And yeah. It was, you know, the guy smiling and dialing and selling you shit you didn't need. Whereas now, when you rebrand it as communication and psychology, that's what it really is.
It's fascinating, and I love sales and marketing is my thing. I just love that, you know. And I remember years ago we took on a sales guy in one of the showrooms, and I was interviewing people, and there was one guy I really liked him. I just said, this guy is integrity. I really like this guy. And then the other guy was a natural born salesman. I said, I have to employ the salesman. But I said to the other guy, I'll employ you part time because I just think you're brilliant.
I like that.
Guess which of them sold the most?
The integrity.
The guy who wasn't the salesman.
Yeah. Because it's
he was sincere, and people can see that.
People have changed, and people's sentiments have changed away. People don't want to be sold to, especially now. I think the information piece we've talked about there, people are now clued up. They know what they're buying. Not like, what's this thing? Everyone knows what they're buying. So now it's like guiding them, giving them advice, helping them, solving the problem, not kind of going, geez, lads, we have 100 of them. Push them this week. That's the old model of like, push them out this week. Whereas now it's like, right, what's the consultative?
How can I help you?
Yeah.
And how can we solve a problem?
Me and you, it was probably the first thing we chatted about downstairs. It's like, it's just, how do you help people? How do you solve? How do you communicate with people properly? Like, that's what it all comes down to. It doesn't matter if you're dealing with CEOs or you're dealing with a customer. It's all about like just communicating on a human level. So what was your first kind of like big win, I suppose? Like, what was your first breakthrough? Where you're like, Jesus, this makes sense now.
Yeah, it was I about 19, I decided to move to Galway City. So I started looking for a job. And of course, this is the 80s. So there was 20% unemployment. It's hard to believe now, but it was difficult. So you couldn't get a job. So basically for a year, I did very, very little. I went out, socialized a lot. You know, I enjoyed myself. And I had a girlfriend at the time. And one day she said, I got your job. I said, oh, great. What's that? Painting a house. I'm sure I don't know anything about painting. Well, I got you the job. You better paint the house. Yeah. So painted the house for this lady. And, you know, it turned out okay. And she said to me, are you busy? I said, no, it's quiet. And she said, why don't you advertise? And I now know that's my skill, sales, advertising, marketing. You know, so I stuck an ad in a local newspaper. Then there was no phones in, you know, and nothing. So like 3 weeks later, I said, look at the paper. So there's 20 other guys there, painters available. And all the same. I said, we'll try it one more time. And this was like a eureka moment. I just reworded it. I said, rooms painted from €25, paint included, no charge if unsatisfied. So worked awful cheap.
Lovely. I included the copywriting paint. 101 right there.
Yeah, included the paint. And I give an absolute guarantee. Don't pay me if you're not happy. And I used the magic word from.
Did you were the original Hermosi. Yeah, you got it. Unbeatable offers.
Yeah, and I didn't think about it, but that was genius. Yeah. So the phone started ringing. And then it's up to you. Like, I started my first business for €50. I bought a pair of white overalls. If you see a guy with a pair of white overalls, he's a painter.
Me and Ben were just laughing about this a few minutes ago. I went in to say, look, we've got to turn off the lights. He goes, oh, you've got the cloud. I said, no, I just went in with authority and said, not can we turn off the lights? We're turning off the lights. Or it's like, you know, see a guy wearing a Loomis jacket. You just assume that they're working there and they can go anywhere. I love those lads on YouTube that do the pranks. We snuck into like the U2 concert for Zero and you see the two lads putting on the two Loomis jackets with a clipboard and a ladder. And they just walk in anywhere. They do, this is their shtick. They go to F1, they go to the football, they go to the boxing. A ladder, clipboard, two luminous jackets. And one lad's on the radio going, yeah, we're on the way. Quick. We got to get up to the third floor. They just walk straight in.
I might try that. That sounds like fun.
I think I see you doing that.
Yeah, I just have a little wager on it.
It's human psychology, right? You kind of go, oh, the lads are in a rush there. Let them through because we need shortcuts in life. We need, our brain needs shortcuts to make sense of what's happening in front of us. We can't keep figuring stuff out all the time. White overalls.
And I'm a painter and the phone's ringing. So now I'm calling out and people say, I need to get the house painted. And you know, people used to ask me to pick colours. So I hadn't a clue, you know. I was, I think a nice green here. And, and
white everything. Everything.
All of a sudden then I'm employing a couple of guys, you know, and we're building up this business almost. And there was only one thing motivating me, make money. Can we make money? I was making money. You know, and I'd work 7 days a week. No, if somebody wanted a shop or something painted the weekend, I could do that, or a business, no problem.
Yeah.
You know, and then I thought somebody wants wallpapering done. So how hard can that be? You put paste in there, I thought that's easy. And I got a phone call that night, the wallpaper fell off. So then I bought a book, How to Wallpaper. You know, you know. So I did that for maybe 10 years. And then I got sick of painting and I just wanted to try something different.
I said it's hard graft.
It was. I was probably okay at it. But it was kind of boring. And sure, look, it was just so... Does any business I ever started, I knew absolutely nothing about it. And I did no research. It was just like, why don't we try this? So the next thing, I'm living in a house in a place called Castellan Heights in Galway, which Castellan Heights is about 220 houses. And I'm sharing a house with a few lads. And I see these guys going door to door selling coal. And I was like, that looks like an easy business. So I go to the wholesalers and I say, how much is a ton of coal? And it's so much. I say, okay, so you buy the coal, you sell the coal, you make €4 a bag. Surely to God, you'd sell 100, 200 bags a day. That's 405. You'd make a couple of grand a week at that, wouldn't you? No problem. That's my research.
It's the kind of maths I do, all right?
Yeah.
It's the same level as I get.
Back of an envelope, you know? So, okay, so I buy a truck. And that was a fascinating business. I learned everything from the coal business. But the first day I arrived in my own housing estate, which was Castellan Heights in Galway City. And 10 minutes later, another guy arrived with a truck selling coal. And he's like, who the fuck are you coming in here?
Turf war.
Yeah, this is my
coal war, essentially.
And I was, geez, if he was nice about it, you know, but he wasn't. I was okay. So then I realized 6 days a week, there's six different trucks going in there selling coal. And I'm like,
you bought the truck and everything at this stage?
3 years later, there was only one. I got rid of every one of them.
Kill or be killed.
No, it was, they were all selling coal. I was looking for new customers.
You were selling warmth.
No, I was like, this was where the sales and marketing came in. Because they call, hey, knock on the door. And that was their, you know, knock on the, do you want coal? No. I was, hi, how are you? I introduced myself. My name is Sean Brett. I'm in this area every Wednesday evening. Here's my card. Here's a leaflet of the different products we do. We're giving a free bale of briquettes with every bag of coal for the month of September.
Oh, lovely.
You know, so we had all this spiel.
Yeah.
And then my favourite was I had one competitor and he was the biggest guy in Galway at the time. And he hated me. He did everything he could to undermine me. He'd go to the wholesaler and he'd say, if you sell him coal, I'm not buying. And he was not a nice person, but I was Mr. Charming. I'd go into the wholesaler and say, I have a box of chocolates for the girls in the office. I was, yeah, Sean, what are you doing? You're cutting the price, whatever. You know, I said, ah, don't worry about it. You know, so they liked me, you know.
But it's just, look, it's the same thing. I always think this, like, it's the same thing to be sound as it is to be a bollocks. Like, it doesn't cost you anything to be nice to people.
It's the right, you know.
You can win by doing.
Of course, you can.
You can win by being yourself. I, you know, this whole old school mentality of like, no, kill or be killed, cutthroats, blah blah blah. You can win by being yourself over the long term if you're true to yourself. And you look after people.
But this particular guy, I called him my motivator because he disliked me so much. So I might knock on your door. You know, I said, hi, how are you? I'm Sean. And I said, no, I'm getting called off the same fella for the last 20 years. I said, ah, great, no problem at all. Do you mind my asking who you are? And he said, John, you know. Ah, John's a lovely man. He's lovely. What's he charging you? And he said, €17. I have the same one now for 16. No, we're dealing with John. I said, yeah. We're free bill of briquettes with every bag of coal as well. No. And the last thing I do, I said, I tell you what about this coal here? I know, and he didn't have it. Did you ever try this? I said, no. I said, give you a free bag. And like, they're like, you can't say no to free.
Yeah.
So I'm bringing, and then I could imagine the guy has gone into his wife. Who's that? And like, Sean Press. And it was like, he just gave us a free bag of coal. John never gave us anything free in his life because he was mean, you know.
Yeah.
And you come back a week later and you might make a new customer. And if you did, you got a buzz out of it.
Yeah. But there's the power of reciprocity. If you give me something, I automatically feel like I have to give you something back. It's just that it's built into us. I feel like I owe you now.
Yeah. But I learned so much from that business. And next door then was a place called Terrellen Heights, which I'll never forget because it had 555 houses.
I love that you remember that.
Yeah, but there's a reason. Because I went in there on a Saturday knocking at doors and 554 of them refused. I sold one bag of coal. Now, that's rejection on a large scale. And if you can handle rejection, that's good, you know?
But that's
like anyone
training.
Else would give up.
But why would they not buy enough of you?
It was Saturday and there'd been a different, like, there was 20% unemployment, so people either drove a taxi, became painters, or started selling coal or logs or something, you know. Right. So there was 5 days, there was five different guys who knocked at their door. And now here I am on a Saturday. So I was rejected basically 554 times. I sold one bag of coal. Now anybody in their right mind would just give up. But I didn't. And 5 years later, I had taken most of Terrellen. So I ended up with the biggest coal business in Galway. And then, of course, all the competitors, nobody talked to anybody. You know, and they really disliked me because I was new. But after I got established, then I started, said, lads, you know, we need to sit down and talk here.
Yeah.
I got them all together. And it was so funny, like.
But, like, it's, again, we had Charlene and Niamh from Ellen Joe, they're two Ballina people as well, had them in yesterday, and they were saying that, like, they used to, Niamh used to have a skin clinic, and when she opened up, I think it was in Ballina, no one talked to each other. None of the beauticians, none of the salons talked to each other. She was like, this makes no sense. Like, I mean, you run out of something you could just grab next door. So she got them all together.
Yeah.
And there was this real hesitancy to go, oh, no, 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 I don't want to talk to her. She's got salon down the road. She'll take my business. And Niamh was like, look, it's big enough for everybody.
Yeah.
We can work together and make it bigger instead of this scarcity mentality of like, oh, no, if Sean wins, I've got to lose.
Yeah.
Like, that's the old school. Like, that's that. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and it's just always good to talk to the competitors anyway.
You know what I mean? You can steal our ideas when you're inside, buying them tea.
feed them the wrong information.
So what you were building and building this, and you were just making money and you're having a bit
of
crack.
I was making money and I was working hard, you know, I was working 6 days a week. But I liked working, but I was going out, you know, 7 nights a week. I was a party animal as well. It was
money in, money out.
Yeah, it was a bit of ADHD. You know, you were just energy levels. And of course, we talk about going to the gym now, but imagine you're selling like 50 ton of coal a week. That's a lot. Mm. You know, I could throw 3 ton of coal into a person's house. I used to go up 3 flights of stairs with 50 kg bags of coal. No, you didn't even think about it. You know, like a courier now cannot lift any more than 15 kg, I think it is.
Really?
You know, I was doing 50 kgs upstairs. So you were super fit. You know, you didn't think about it, but you were super fit. So it was fun. It was a great experience, and it was hard. That was hard work.
It sounds it.
Hard physical work.
Yeah. It sounds it hard on all the levels of like the constant sales.
But it was actually great fun because you were meeting the general public and you're meeting them in their natural environment. So some of the stories were just hilarious. The way people live and the things, everything that went on in the city, we knew. And when we were talking to each other, we knew more than anybody. You knew everything. You knew who was having affairs, you know, who was getting in trouble, you know, who was mad stuff.
Yeah, it was to know someone, live with them, to know someone, deliver them coal.
Yeah, you could write a book about it. But yeah, that was fun, yeah.
And what was the next step then? Like, where did you take that business?
So, yeah, so it's all good. We're making money. And then always, you know, looking for opportunities. And there's opportunities just everywhere. And one of the things we noticed was a lot of people were replacing their oil tank. So the old oil tank was a square steel tank. And
this remember would them.
Develop a leak, a pinhole or whatever.
Yeah, so the corners, it's a welding issue. The corners would give way.
So they'd buy a new plastic tank. So the old one would be thrown in the garden. So at the end of the day, we had an empty truck. And you'd see these. So you'd say, look, do you want me to take that away for a small fee? So you're making more money. And we ended up with all these square steel tanks in the garden. And we're looking at these tanks. What are we going to do with these? You know, and things are quiet in the summer. So somebody says, why don't we cut them up and turn them into coal bunkers? So you just chop them up at the angle grinder, weld them, put a lid on the top, a chute on the bottom. Voila, there's your coal bunker. Sell them the following year. And it worked out really well. And it was fun because nobody else was selling coal bunkers. You know, and one of the things we did, when the government used to build houses then, believe it or not. So they'd build maybe 50 houses in an estate, and that was all solid fuel heating. So they were great customers. So everybody wanted them. So I would go in there with the coal, really cheap, free this, free that. And you'd do your best. But nobody else was selling coal bunkers. Right. So I'd sell the coal bunker, maybe €50 for a coal bunker. And someone would say, no, I'm getting my coal off John. No, I won't. I said, that's, you know, you couldn't win them off. That's fine. What about coal bunkers? How much are they? They're €10 a week for 5 weeks. I'll take that. Oh, I'm sorry, I can't sell your coal bunker. It's only a service we provide for our existing customers.
Love
I'm sorry. And but I want to buy one. Tell you what, buy the coal off me for 5 weeks, pay off the coal bunker, and then go back to John.
They're not going back to John.
After 5 weeks, they're your best friend. You know. So not alone were we selling coal bunkers, making money on coal bunkers, we're also making more customers.
Because
the coal business was a repeat business. You wanted a customer, you know. And then we're looking, you know, timber sheds and back gardens, and the quality wasn't great. And one day we said, why don't we make a steel shed? Because a few lads working for me, and I could tell they were talented with steel. I wasn't at all, you know. I was a salesman.
So you were making the bunkers at this stage. You were getting the old tanks
and
making
we were
the
doing
bunkers.
A lot. You know, we were doing, Jesus, maybe 1,000 bunkers a year. But and then we said, we just made a shed one day. And this is great fun, you know. It's a bit of fun. We make a shed, and then we made a garage. I remember we made a 6x4 meter garage. It took the full week to make the garage. You know, now we'll make it an hour. And I had this good friend, and I was anytime we get together, a few pints, we'd be talking about whatever the latest idea was. I was like, make these steel sheds, you know. So we need a name for the business. And after a lot of talking and pints and everything, what about Steel Jack? And that's how the name came up, you know. So that's how that started. That's 30 years ago.
And did that just evolve then? Did you just kind of, did demand kind of start to seesaw in towards the steel tech sheds? Or how did the coal business get left behind, I suppose?
It did, but they were kind of complimentary because you did this in the summer.
Yeah.
And like I said, the word entrepreneurship never entered my head. You know, you were just doing something that was making money and you were having a bit of fun. Fun was important. Always in, you know, a bit of excitement, something different. And slowly but surely, we built up this steel tech business and it got bigger and bigger. We opened two showrooms, one in Galway. One
when did you start this?
1995, so 30 years ago.
Okay. Geez, you were ahead of the game on that, weren't you, really? Like,
well, what was different about that was, you know, if you look at the painting business or the coal business, there was an existing business there and you went in and broke into that market. But this time we identified a gap in the market. And anybody who's starting a business, if you can, everyone's looking for that great idea, that new idea. Now, it's hard to come up with a new idea.
Very.
You're probably much better, statistically anyway, to take an existing business and do it better. So don't be waiting for the idea.
Especially like what you did, though. Yeah. Especially for your first couple of businesses. I think the best way is just make it a wee bit quicker, make it a wee bit cheaper, make it a wee bit easier.
Yeah.
Don't be trying to reinvent the wheel. Everyone's looking for the big idea. The big idea comes from reps and evolution like yours. Kind of going, we did this. Figured out a bit of this, figured out that, figured out this. Ah, then the idea reveals itself. The idea doesn't reveal itself out of your brain. No. That's a myth. That myth of like the genius entrepreneur who's like, aha, I have it. The Einstein moment. It comes from evolution and industry knowledge.
Yeah, I think it was Shane McGowan said when he was asked something about the Fairy Tale of New York, one of the greatest songs ever. You know how we wrote that song. It's such an amazing song. It's so successful. He said, yeah, I wrote thousands of songs. You know, this was a successful one.
Yeah,
you know, so it's a little bit like that. It's when you're starting whatever the business is, it evolves, changes completely more often than not.
And that's what kills businesses, is that they never start. I do this thing for students. I go in this entrepreneurship and I go in and go, right, what's the biggest killer of business? Because you want to engage them straight away because they're all sitting down going, okay, it's going to be boring as balls. You sit down and go, what kills businesses? What's the number one killer? Cash, people, wrong product. It's like, nope, they never start.
Yeah.
And they're like, ah. Because just, everyone's got that idea in them, right? Everyone's got that thing they want to do, but they won't start for
the courage.
X, Y reasons, right? Fear. Fear is the only reason, really.
Yeah.
You don't have that problem, though.
No, and it's you know, I was out for dinner with my young lads there just after Christmas, and the oldest lad said, I know, Dad, you're going to love this question. He was like, what advice would you give your 30-year-old self? And I said, yeah, I love that.
How long have you got?
Yeah, no, he says, I'm going to make it awful simple because, you know, the one listen to you for long, you know. So I said, two things. Stay out of the sun. And I said, just one thing. I said, just this one thing. If you could not care what other people think about you, your life would be so much happier, better, successful. You don't care. And I was chatting to a very successful entrepreneur there a few weeks ago. And he was just saying, it's them two lads in the pub laughing at me. The fuckers laughing at me. He says, that's what drives me.
Good.
You know, it's like years later, you know.
You need motivation wherever you find it from. It's hard not to care, though. I think we all do, like.
The older you get, the less you care.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. That's a big one, you know. Just don't care what people think about you.
Some things you have to learn, though. Some things you kind of have to learn. And look, people don't care about you, really. They don't. And I mean this with the best will in the world. Like, people are self-absorbed.
They
are. We're all thinking about ourselves, what we're going to have for dinner, what I'm going to collect my daughter, Jesus, that bill due, blah, 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 blah. People care about you for a second. It's just, it's magnified now with social media and stuff. You kind of think everyone's watching you. They're not. I think it's unbelievably good advice. You're like Baz Luhrmann. Use sunscreen and just don't care.
Yeah, stay out of the sun.
We'll remix that as the first ever entrepreneur experiment song. So how did steel tech evolve then? Like, what was the origin story was where I started in sheds in the summer, but like it's grown to be this monstrous business now. So give me the evolution story of how we kind of got here.
It's interesting. And I often say when I'm under pressure, I'm at my best because it was easy. And it was going really well, you know, and it's, I was lucky. The guys I work with, I had great guys around me, you know. And I think sometimes really smart people can fail because they think they know all the answers. And I, you know, going back to school, I thought I was a stupid person. So I was always prepared to listen to other people and get advice and whatever. So I had great people around me. So the business is starting to go well. And then we're heading to the tiger economy, you know, and the money's rolling in. Sean's off having a great time. You know, I'm not even focusing on the business. It's so easy. The money's coming in. And then the crash, 2007, 2008. And at this stage, I'm just going to holidays all the time.
But you were probably flying. 1995, yeah, you started rolling. Up. You were probably, what, you're 10 years in now, 2005. You're hitting the go-go times. Yeah. So you've probably 13 years of really strong growth there, did you?
We had, but we should have a lot more growth. But it was, I wasn't focused on building a big business around. I was just basically making money. And money's rolling in, having a great time. And then I go into work one day and I said, there's no artist coming in. I was, what? What's going on? You know, I wasn't even aware of current affairs then because I didn't have an interest. I wouldn't know. So I was like, geez, we have to do something. And then we had like this brainstorming session. What are we going to do? So we thought, Jesus, we could go bang here. Well, if we go bang, I says, we don't want to go to small bank. We want to go to big bank. So we're going to expand. And I'm like, what? I said, yeah, we're going to expand.
How big were you at that stage? What was the?
We had only 3 showrooms then.
Okay.
So.
And what were you selling? What was the main products?
Mostly sheds and garages. Some
so
garden
steel
rooms.
Yeah, garages yeah. and
All
sheds.
Steel, yeah.
Okay.
So we started opening new showrooms. And the interesting thing was you could get new sites. You might get 6 months free rent because nobody was expanding.
Yeah.
And you were getting great deals.
This 2008, 2009?
Yeah, 2008. So from 2008 probably up to 13, 14, we opened 15, 16 showrooms.
Oh.
And then, of course, when it went back then, it was newspapers. So when we went into a new location, Take Curry, somewhere like that, we would take 2 full-page ads for 6 weeks. And the idea there was, and radio, everything. You just threw everything at the advertising. So if you did that, I discovered, if you did that for 6 weeks, it was like you were there, always there. You were established. It was an interesting.
You went back to your advertising days. You went back to your kind of what worked back in the day.
Yeah. And you know, the other funny thing was the golden pages. I talk about starting business by accident. Like I nearly started this business by accident. The people that can remember the golden pages, I know, Gary, if you can remember that, you're probably old enough.
I look very young, but I actually do remember. Yeah.
That's the Botox. Yeah. Yeah.
That was great. Not yet, but probably soon. Yeah, yeah. No, I do. Like, for sure, they'd be given out every year, and every house would get a golden pages. And so, they were a big thing. Like.
They were huge. Yeah. That was, you know, there was no internet.
It was
then,
how
so
you found
it.
Stuff. Like, you'd so go
we,
through them.
We used to take the full page, and there was 6 or 7 golden pages around the country. And then we'd take the cover, the inside of the cover. You know, so we'd have the full page. And I think the full page was, say it was costing something like 17,000. It wasn't cheap. And then now you have 7 phone books around the country. You think you're going to get a deal, but you're not because they have a monopoly, you know. And I was like, I'm paying too much. 17,000 for one page. It's too much. And I was like,
serious cash.
They're always looking for new business. And I think they're giving, if you're brand new, I think they're giving you discounts. Uh-huh. So I pretended to be brand new business. So I phoned them up and I said, I said to Simon beside me, I said, give me your phone because I don't want them to, in case they recognize my number. So I rang. I says, hi, my name is Simon Langan and I'm from the UK. I'm just after moving back to Limerick and I'm starting a business. It's called Loctite. It's a security business and I'm taking full page ads. We're really going all in with this business and it's brand new business. I'm looking for the best deals I can get. What can you do for me? And they said 17 grand. I was, thank you very much. I'll be back to you. And he had my phone number, Simon's number, right? So I was happy then. I'm not being ripped off.
Right.
End of story. The following year, the phone book comes out and they have one line, Loctite Security and your man's phone number. Next thing he's getting phone calls. Is this Loctite Security? We nearly started the business, you know, by accident. So, you know, I think people put a lot of time and effort into coming up with the idea or whatever, but it can be by accident.
I think it's the execution.
Yeah.
Like it's the execution. Like people overestimate the idea. They overestimate the idea and it having to be right and perfect and good. Whereas like an inch of movement is worth a mile of intention. Like just getting going. Just starting. So how did you grow though during the crash? Like when you were selling sheds and garages, how did you manage to get the customers? I know you bombarded like ads and stuff
like that. It was marketing. It was fantastic offers. You know, we had grip. We always had good prices. So we had to discount significantly, which meant we had to become efficient. And to be blunt about it, back in the tiger economy, we were not efficient. You know, we were probably paying too much for materials. we weren't working efficiently. I had to give everybody a pay cut. Now, we reversed the pay cut in 6 months. That's how fast we turned it around. It was amazing how quickly we were able to turn things.
What do you attribute that to?
The marketing. You really? Know, and the way you promote a product, you know, it's fascinating. It really is. And I should set up a, you know, I always say I'm always starting a new business. I have to hold myself back, but I'd love to set up a marketing company.
I think a marketing company is in your future.
Yeah. And it's great fun.
But it's common sense. A lot of it's common sense. People get caught up in the complexity and the tools and the this and the that. And you're like, it's mainly common sense and psychology.
You've got to make it simple. You know, if you're going in to buy a new jacket and you see 10 different jackets, it's like, oh, Jesus. If you see 3 jackets, it's an easy decision.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so make it easy. Don't confuse people. Make it so simple.
And then you would open up new showrooms. So was that your expansion plan? What was the idea behind? So you were getting good deals. That was number one. Yeah. But what was the idea then throughout the expansion? It's like, right, we're going to expand and kind of grab the market and become a big player at a scale of efficiency? Or what was the thinking behind that?
It was everything. And I was enjoying it. You know, I was actually really enjoying it. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs, they love the business. You know, love going into work in the morning and it's exciting. So it was always, and I, you know, designing a new showroom, I got great kick out of that. You know, you'd spend a lot of money and, you know, the competition might put in a few sheds and garages in the car park. You know, we were landscaping it. You know, we were putting in background music. We were doing, ideally, that have a candle lit in the office and small things.
You're making an experience.
It was. So the idea was, and you know, you'll see it. You could be going, you know, it could be kids going into River Island buying something for the weekend, you know, and the music is on. All of a sudden, inside 15 minutes, you're in this different environment and you're more likely to spend money. You know, they were coming in to buy a shed. You had them in this environment. They're in their backyard and in the subconscious mind and there's music playing and it's lovely.
This could be us. We could be having a lovely...
We
could transform the garden.
So it was... It's creating that experience and making it simple. And
but I love the fact you're saying that about sheds, because I think a lot of people think, oh, yeah, that's grand, but I don't have a cool product. But you're talking about sheds. Like, it's a fairly functional thing. But you're applying marketing and clever psychology to the purchase of a shed, which is, you would imagine, quite functional.
Yeah, it is. And you know, from a sales point of view, you come in to me to buy a shed. And if I'm talking to you, I'm not talking about the shed. I'm talking about, what's your problem? Oh, you don't have room. Your utility room is cluttered. So now I'm talking about, well, you can put your washer and your dryer in here and you can operate it. We're not talking about a shed. We're talking about solving your problems. You know, and if people...
It's not a shed, it's a lifestyle.
Yeah, it is. And it's adding value to your property. And it's, you know, it's not costing you $2,000. It's adding 10 grand to the value of you. You know, this isn't costing you. It's what it's saving you.
I'm nearly buying one myself. I don't even need one, but I'm nearly buying one. It's reframing, isn't it? We talked about frameworks earlier. Like, it's reframing that. You know, you're not buying a shed, you're buying this, you're buying space, you're buying a new room, you're buying, you know, all the clutter in your house is gone, you're going to feel better. It's all reframing, isn't it?
And salespeople are everyone has their own unique approach, you know. And I got this guy once go around a mystery shop, all the salespeople. And he went into one of our salespeople down in Cork, a phenomenal lady, just a fantastic salesperson. And I said, how'd you get on? And he said, like, I nearly bought a shed off her. He said, she was that good, you know? So, yeah, some people are just gifted.
So coming out of the crash then, 2013, 2014, what position were you in?
So there was a lot of growth. I mean, we quadrupled in size, you know, so it's going really well. And the next big step forward then, of course, is 2015 was one of the most exciting years ever. You know, the year started out. Now, it didn't end up great, but it started phenomenal because I was nominated for the EY Entrepreneur of the Year, and I had never heard of that.
No.
And even the word entrepreneur wasn't a word I ever used.
Did you know when you were nominated, though?
I did. I just got a phone call or something. I was, what's the EY Entrepreneur of the Year?
No way.
We need to interview you. And I was like, sure, there's no chance. It's not a hope, but sure, we'll go to the end. And some boring accountants, I said. And then next year, I'm fucking nominated. I'm one of the 24 finalists for the EY Entrepreneur of the Year. Wow.
And that's as big as it gets, really, here in Ireland.
And it was a game
apart from
changer.
Coming on the pod. Yeah.
Indeed. And it, you know what, it improved my confidence a lot, because I had never seen myself as this successful business person. I was
really?
Just someone making, I never stood back and said, you know what, you've created something, you've done something. I was just another day.
What was it though, Sean? Was it the fact that you got a chance to sit back and kind of reflect, or what changed?
Like? No, it wasn't easy because you're thrown in at the deep end and all the insecurities from leaving school at 14, and you're going in and meeting all these other entrepreneurs, you know, and we arrive up, it was the Four Seasons, the Intercontinental Hotel, on like a Thursday afternoon. I walk in the door, like, and straight away I met one of the other guys that were at the bar. And all of a sudden, like, we just clicked because we're the same mindset.
You found your tribe.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, like, I'm meeting other lads that left school that had dyslexia and that were like, I was like, these lads are, and of course, later on at night when you have a few pints, it's chaos. Like,
the real truth comes out.
Yeah, because there's a lot of big personalities there, you know, so all of a sudden, yeah, that was a game changer. And then it's, Sean, we need you for an interview here. And I was like, huh? So you're doing interviews on the radio and TV, and it's like, you know, because I do a lot of videos now on social media and that sort of thing. But before that, I couldn't have done them.
Really? That's interesting because you come across so natural. Like,
yeah, and it's like the first video that I didn't do was we bought a, it was the old Coca-Cola factory in Tuman. That was just January in 2015. And I said, we had to rebuild the whole new roof, everything. So I said, I want to make a video of all of this, all the work for about a month.
I love those videos. So I can look before and after transformation. Yeah, I love them.
Like I said, when I'm 90 years of age, I can look back at this and see. And then at the end of it, your man said, I need you to say a few words. And I'm not in it. I couldn't open my mouth.
No way.
Couldn't open my mouth. But by the end of 2015, I had learned. So apart from the novelty and you know, the being nominated, it was a massive boost for the confidence. It was an education in itself on how to come on here and do a podcast with the likes of yourself.
But I think that's so interesting because when people will listen to this and look at you, go, ah, yeah, natural born, you know, salesman, smooth operator, really good communicator. I think it'll be very motivational for people listening, kind of going, 2015, like, he couldn't have done this. Like, it's very different. And I think this is one of the things I'm most bullish on, is that in the next couple of years, this is going to become even more and more important. This in person, you know, being able to tell your story, because AI is going to like create so much noise and so much distraction for people that people want human connection and stories more than ever, I believe. And I meet a lot of founders. I'm like, why aren't you the front of your business here? So my big prediction is that founder-led businesses where you're the head figure and you're the storyteller will become more and more important, because that'll be what people latch onto, is that I buy from Steeltech because of Sean. It's going to come back to your coal story. Yeah. It's the same thing, but applying modern technology to it, doing that at scale. Instead of reaching 555 in that estate, you're reaching 555,000 on your Instagram.
Well, you can see clear examples of that. Which, I mean, the likes of Richard Branson has a bigger following on social media than the Virgin brand. And of course, Donald Trump,
precisely,
he has a bigger following than the Republican Party. The Republican Party has been around for hundreds of years. He's only around for less than, and he has a bigger following. So it's important. I think it's really important to have somebody out ahead of the brand and which, you know, that tells a story that makes it more authentic.
But like, obviously I do it for a living, so I'm very bullish on it. But all the stuff I'm seeing and I'm learning over the last 6 years, I'm like, this is going to become so important, because it's not free. There is a cost. The cost is expertise. The cost is being able to communicate. The cost is time. But Jesus, compared to the marketing reach of, you know, doing that for your brand, it's astronomical. So if you can be a good founder-led brand, it's huge to like build your business. So 2015, that's really interesting. Thanks for sharing that, because I think that's a lot of people listening will kind of go, geez, okay, that's something I need to actually work on.
Yeah, it was such an exciting time. It really was. And of course, then we've gone away most years since on the week long executive education.
It sounds like great crack.
Lots of executive education. Of course, it
sounds like great crack.
You know? And you have some of the best speakers in the world. And the really cool thing was I ended up getting to go to Stanford and Harvard and Oxford and MIT and all the coolest universities in the world. And it's like, and then you're there, and all of a sudden you get more confidence and you're asking questions. And it's like, wow. And then, of course, you're meeting the other guys, the best part of it, really. And some of the madness, you know, like we were in Berlin and we go out for beers afterwards and we go into this quiet German pub, you know, about 11, 12 o'clock at night, and there's no two people in the pub. And all of a sudden, 20 of us go in, you know, and then the bar is buzzing. Then one of the lads goes down and he finds a busker on the street and he brings him in. So now we've brought music and two lads go in and help your man with the bar. The bar is, and the lad is there at their own bar. It's like, I never seen this in my life.
She's going to say, I never seen anything like it. Best Thursday night he's ever had.
Yeah, probably. You know, so, you know, the entrepreneurial approach to everything is just that little bit different, and it's a lot of fun.
And was 2015 then a kick on for you in the business? Did that reshape how you think about business?
It did. It just gave me more confidence and more ambition. And then all of a sudden, we're going to take over the world, of course. You know, I suppose sometimes you think you can do no wrong and you're unstoppable and it's great. So, like I said earlier on, everything I did, there was no research. You know, we're making it up as going along. And we'd done the same thing. We went into the UK market and, of course, no research. Straight in at the deep end. And that turned out to be a big mistake.
What'd you do?
Well, we're doing maybe 20 million at the time. So we're going for 100 million in 5 years less. No problem. It's okay. Easy. We'll just go straight into the UK market. The product over there, it's wide open. The product is poor quality. From what little I know about it, we have a superior quality product. It's easy. We go straight in. We're going to open 20 showrooms inside 2 years. So we have eight showrooms in the first year. Each showroom will do potentially 2 million. That's 16 million straight away. You know, so we have eight showrooms, all good locations.
Did you start them? Did you open
them? We did, eight of them. Like three of them never opened properly. So straight in at the deep end with no research. All over the country. It was like, when I think of it, we didn't just make one mistake here. We made a few mistakes.
What were they? This is important because people will look, often people put people on pedestals and go, oh yeah, it's easy for him. He's made it now. But you had made it. You were doing, what, 20 million a year?
Yeah.
You know, you figured it out.
We probably, I don't want to say lucky because, you know, we worked hard and we were smart. So it wasn't just lucky. But we had, everything had worked and everything went right. And you just all of a sudden think, oh sure, of course, it worked in the past, it'll work in the future. But no.
What was different?
We made, you know, looking back, it was so obvious the mistakes we made. In hindsight, it's 2020 vision. But we've like eight showrooms. I spent a couple hundred grand in each showroom. And we make them the highest possible standard. That was the first mistake. The standard was shit in the UK. They're so bad. Their garden sheds over there are so bad. There's no steel sheds. It's just timber sheds. And it's hard to believe how bad they are. Like, I would say I know more about the shed business in the UK than most people in the UK. We visited hundreds of competitors.
After or before?
During the whole lot. We're always learning, you know. And there was only one guy doing it right. The rest, and he was doing 10 million inside a 2 kilometre radius. The rest of them are so amateurish.
So what went wrong?
We were too good. We put in too high a standard, which meant we were high prices.
How can you be too good?
The product was very high standard, which meant it was a bit more expensive. It didn't need to be more expensive.
Right.
The single biggest mistake, we didn't realise it, but when we started 30 years ago, we used to sell timber sheds as well. And another company manufactured them. We took 10%. Couldn't be simpler. So it was 50% timber, 50% steel on average. So they came in to buy a timber shed for 500 euros. They ended up buying a steel shed for 1,500. In the UK, it was all timber sheds. So when they seen steel tech, steel sheds, they thought, this is what I buy in the local hardware shop. It's poor quality. There'll be condensation. It'll blow away in a storm.
Right.
So we didn't even get the footfall. They didn't come into us.
Is that they couldn't kind of understand the product, was it?
They had no knowledge. A steel shed to them was an inferior product, not a superior product.
Interesting. All about that framing again.
And it was such a simple thing that we didn't realise.
So what would you have done differently?
We would have went in 50-50.
50%
wood, beautiful showroom, 50% wood, 50% steel. But the exact same emphasis on marketing the timber sheds. And then when they come in the door, then they can see, well, this is much more expensive, but this is a lifetime investment to add value to my property, you know.
Gives them a frame of reference.
I don't have to paint it, there's no maintenance.
Goes back to your thing of like, don't give them 10 options, but give them a few to pick from, and then the customer feels like they're in control.
So that was a big, and of course, the other thing was opening too many showrooms all over the place, too fast. And we were a bit unlucky with some of the staff we employed as well. We employed a few wrong ones.
But I think when you're going at that sort of scale, that sort
of
speed.
Then the next step, we ended up losing nearly 2 million euros in the whole thing. But that doesn't bother me in the slightest. What I was losing was my time.
Mm.
And it was no fun. Remember, I always said it was fun. It's no fun now. And it's not just we're losing money that's not fun, because there was light at the end of the tunnel. We were learning fast. The next thing was put another couple of million into a factory, and it was all very doable. But my problem was, I was going down to Shannon or up to Dublin Airport, flying over to Manchester or Birmingham or Edinburgh, staying in a miserable, renting a car, staying in a miserable hotel, up and down the motorway, stuck in traffic. And that gave me such an appreciation for this country.
Mm.
We have it so good here.
Me too.
We really do. Like, we give out about traffic here, you're stuck for half an hour. Over there, you could be on the motorway for 2 hours and nothing happening.
It is different. The volume is different. It's a great country, in fairness. The scale always blows me away. Yeah. Just when I get up in the morning, fly to London, again, the city, I'm still like a child, almost like looking up going, dude, this is mad. This is so big. But you have the downsides then of that, yeah, is that it's just so big. The congestion is huge.
Yeah, so I wasn't enjoying it. So
what'd you do?
Well, I went to another guy over there and I said, what the fuck do I have to do to get out here? We just have to get out. So we basically got out of all the leases. We paid everyone, so we didn't walk away catching anybody for money because I said we will be back. And we closed all the showrooms, took all the product out, and now we have a few partners there. So basically existing people are selling sheds and we just export sheds to them and they sell them.
Good idea.
And yeah, it's a simple model, just simple sheds. So there is still a lot of room for expansion, but of course, Sean has to prioritize Sean. So
time. You yeah. said the magic words there, the time.
Yeah, time is the most precious thing.
Not getting any of it back. You know, it's the most valuable thing we have. And people often overlook it for other things, kind of going, they put on the long finger going, ah, oh, yeah, when I have this, I'll have more time and blah, blah, blah. No, you still have the same 24 hours every day.
Yeah. I think it's a mistake. Faster. It's a mistake a lot of entrepreneurs make is to get sucked into it and they don't realize, you know, we're only here for a short time.
Mm.
So you have to prioritize your health and your time and your relationships and everything else. That is not, there's a lot of other things out there as well. Like,
how did you regroup from this? Because that's still, 2 million is a lot in anyone's words, but also the psychological thing of it not working.
It didn't bother me, strangely enough.
No.
You know, I think I didn't enjoy it. It was exciting at times opening a new showroom, but the day-to-day flying over and back, it wasn't enjoyable. So I was glad to be out of it. And I was glad I tried it. You know, always try. And learned so much. And I always say, you will learn more from mistakes than successes.
If you're willing to.
Yeah. It's so important. I mean, there's a guy I know, and he said when he was a kid, his father used to, every Sunday, have a conversation. It was like, what did you fail at this week? And what an odd conversation, you would imagine. But he wanted to know, what did he fail at? And he said he was such a wise man because he was, that's where you learn. And then he says, as he grew up, he wasn't afraid of failure. You know, I was just, it's because, you know, when you go back to your school, you have to do exams, you have to do this, you know, you have to do it on your own. You know, whereas in business, you have to work with people. So, yeah, it didn't bother me. And business was good here. We were solid here. So
I would put that back to your 55 houses because you've knocked on 55 and 54.
Yeah, rejection.
Yeah. I had the same conversation with my coach this morning. We were talking about a competition we did there a few weeks ago. And I said to him, I failed on that. He goes, oh no, you didn't. Did you fail? I said, no, I did, but it's okay. And here's why. Because I set the bar high. And then now I know where I can get better. I said, it's absolutely fine. Oh, no, I think you had an unrealistic expectation. I said, no, I didn't. The expectation was good. I said, the goal was a push. I said, if you're not failing, you're not pushing. You're not learning. You're not finding where the limit is. I said, I found where the limit is there. But I said, the limit won't be there now in a month's time and I can race again. The limit will be below because I've figured out there's to where the, if you just go out and you just go, it's great. Yeah, we're all here. Yeah, brilliant. If you're not tracking and progressing, well, then you're never getting better.
Yeah.
You're going back.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're either going two ways, I believe. You're going forward or you're going back. You're not stuck in the middle. Yeah, I don't want to be stuck in the middle.
Still is going backwards.
Precisely. Yeah. It's two modes, passive or active. If you're passive, you're going backwards. So what was then when you came back to Ireland, what was the next step for you? Like you said, it didn't really bother you, but what did you do next?
I suppose we went back to the everyday job. And of course, probably the next big thing that happened really was COVID. And like that was, it's like a black swan event, you know, you just, nobody seen that coming. And it was interesting. And again, I really think a lot of us, we're at our best when we're under pressure. If life is too easy, you know, it's too easy. It's just, you're going nowhere. But so then the first lockdown and the weather was good. I really enjoyed it. And then there's another lockdown and we have to lock down. I said, no, we're not locking down. We have to, Sean. They said, we have to. No, I said. Because I always had a problem with authority, you know, and that goes right back to childhood, because I would have a difficult enough relationship with my father. He was like a tough guy, you know, and I was like, if you ask me nicely, I'll do anything, but you tell me to do something, that's a problem. You know, I like the government, we have to shut down. I said, who's telling us we have to shut down? Don't hear that. I can't believe that, you know, you couldn't go within 2 and 2-3 kilometres of your house, and people did it.
But when you look back now, you're kind of going, oh, Jesus, that was bananas. Bananas. It's a problem, though, because it shattered trust in a lot of things. Media trust is shattered. Government trust is shattered. And now we've had that problem where there's a vacuum now of trust.
There is, isn't there? Yeah. There's so much false information. I mean, fake news, as Donald Trump calls it, you know?
Yeah, I can't really say it, but he was right. Like
he coined
the phrase there, and yeah. It's only when... Look, there is some good of it. I think independent media like this is more powerful now because you give people a platform and people make their own judgment on it. You know, this whole left versus right, man versus woman, this versus this, it's just like, that's not how progress is made. That's not how the world should be operating on news for a long time. And we didn't really have the understanding of it. Like, it's selling a product. And the product is often fear, or it's often kind of like, you know, bad news sells. If it bleeds, it leads. That was the thing on Fleet Street, like, you know, at the tabloid papers. Yeah, if it bleeds, it leads. Yeah, yeah. If it's bad news on the front page.
It's kind of
human nature. Like, it is. And I think we briefly talked about some podcasts that kind of lead on kind of emotion or anger or fear.
Yeah.
That's not my style, because I think it's the old school thing of making people worried and selling products to people through fear. Educate people and let them choose themselves. Let them decide what they want to do themselves.
Yeah.
So the second lockdown, went on a tangent there. The second lockdown, what did you do?
Yeah, so everybody said we have to lock down. I said, no, we're an essential service. So we're like, yeah, we're essential because hospitals need sheds and we've made up whatever. So nobody ever knocked at the door and said, why are you open?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And it was a way of spending it for everything, yeah.
Which was just as well, because it went bananas then, because everybody was in their garden. And as soon as it'd be a lockdown, it'd be over, everyone's queuing up to buy sheds. Now, just before COVID, fortunately, we had designed the perfect home office.
Oh.
So the timing couldn't have been more perfect.
It's amazing, isn't it?
So then, once COVID is over, everybody wants a home office. Mm. And now that's probably the biggest part of our business, home offices.
Wow.
And obviously, I'm going to say they're great products. I'm going to promote Steeltech products, but they're genuine.
Luck.
The
Steeltech home office. For.
Yeah, the Steeltech home office is phenomenal. And I've met a few people. Only yesterday, I met this lady, and she said they got a 10-foot, but that's 100 square foot, 10-foot, but a small office. And she said, every day, my husband and myself go out the back door in the morning, we go into the office, we work there until 5, the babysitter comes in the front door, and she said, we love it.
Yeah,
that's, I said, well, you must have a great relationship if you can work in the office with your husband every day. So we do. I said, I wouldn't be recommending it for most people. But I've met quite a few people, and when you meet someone afterwards, a year or two afterwards, they got the product and they love it. You know, and it's home gyms, home offices, garden rooms. It could be utility room. It's garden rooms. It's the advantages is massive. But it's very hard to work at home around the kitchen table. It's just, not in the zone.
It's that. You need that place. Like, we're recording here in Baseline in Dublin. And, like, there's a buzz of energy here. There's people out building stuff. And I was bumping into two lads this morning. They're building this investment company. You know, you need that kind of buzz. You need even the psychological. It sounds silly, but you need even the psychological thing. Going out your front door, going into your office, because then you're in work mode and you're switched on to, like, this is what we're doing, right? We're in work mode here now. Whereas you're in the kitchen table, oh, geez, the laundry needs to go out. Hold on. And you're getting up and you just can't help yourself, especially with me, a bit like yourself. My wife calls me like I'm a golden retriever. I just have this energy. I need to, like, put the energy somewhere. I need to run, need to do things, need to, like, be active. You're doing stuff. Oh, geez, the hedge is a bit long there. I cut that lunchtime now. 2 hours later, I'm out on a ladder cutting the hedge, and you're just, you need the focus. So, like, perfect timing for you. Home offices became a thing. Like, you must have seen explosive growth. Jesus,
it went completely crazy, you know, and then we couldn't even handle the volume.
I was going to ask, were you able to, like, get up to stuff?
No, lead times went from 6 weeks to 6 months.
Are you making the stuff yourselves?
We're
are you important?
We manufacture every little thing ourselves.
Right,
every,
really?
Every detail is manufactured by ourselves.
Yeah, where did you make it?
A garden shed is 5 or 10 little things. It could be 100 different individual things going into a shed. And we're good at it. We're really good at it.
Well, you've been at it so long.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
Yeah, I like to think we've gifted people working in the factory. I love the guys working in the factory making stuff, because I'm watching and saying, wow.
Where'd you make it?
We bought the factory. It was an old Coca-Cola factory in Tuam.
Oh, that was when you rebuilt.
2015, start of the year. So it's like a 9-acre site, and the factory is nearly 100,000 square foot, and we're about to build a new one. So it's we had the space, which, you know, was a great deal. Bought in 15, prices were still low. So yeah, that was one of the good ones.
That's funny. Probably people in 15 told you they were high. That's another
lesson.
Know
what? And I have to really hand it to Coca-Cola, because I went in the first day ever and I met the local Coca-Cola manager. He said, look, we need the offices for another year. I said, okay, but I'd need them then because we're bringing 100 jobs and we're going to grow the business. And he said, he was delighted. And he said, you know what? It's not just about the money. I give the asking price. He said, we'll take that because we want jobs in tune. We want to leave a good
fair play.
Yeah,
a legacy.
So it was cool. Yeah, hand it to Coca-Cola.
I get such a buzz though of stuff being made here. Like I try buy Irish as much as possible. I put on my Instagram stories all the time going, I'm wearing New Dimensions. This is from Ireland. I'm eating this. This is from Ireland. I'm drinking oil coffee. This is this is an Irish owner. Like we have so much business here and people going about tariffs and this, that and the other. Make the effort and buy Irish. Like make the shed that's built down in Tuam. Like
And there is, you know, when you look at competition, the stuff coming from China or whatever, and it's, I often say if somebody comes in and the shed's $3,000, I say, like, I can buy one for 1500. I said, sure, look, if that's your budget, buy it by all means. You know, come back to me in 5 years or whatever when you want a lifelong shed. You know? I love the marketing and one of the videos. We'd done a video a few years ago and I bought a shed. It was like €750. And we put the Steeltech shed, which is 1500. And then we had what we call the Monster Truck Challenge. And I had two big, because I like the toys, two big American trucks. And we basically squashed the truck, the shed, right? So we squashed the truck. And then we took the Steeltech shed and we try and squash that. And of course, the tires are spending the smoke everywhere. You know, and it's the Monster Truck Challenge.
I love that.
So if you were buying a garage.
Because you were on the TikTok thing before TikTok was a thing.
It was.
You should repost that on TikTok. That would fly.
Yeah, the slogan was, if you were buying a garden shed, ask yourself one question. Will it pass the Monster Truck Challenge? You know, and that was so much fun doing that video. And the funny thing was, the guy I bought the cheaper shed off was, he said, that actually done good for us as well. And I'm kind of friends with him now. You know, and I thought he might be insulted. He was not.
Do you do much of that kind of stuff? Do you do much of that kind of marketing? Because that's genius now.
Yeah, I love madness. And it's just like, it just makes life so much more interesting. Like April Fool's Day, we had a farm, because I bought this replica Formula One car. And we put a post up on all social media saying that we're now sponsoring, the Steeltech are delighted to be sponsoring the Mercedes Formula One team. And people believe it.
Ah, it's wild. You know, people believe anything online. You put it up online.
You
give an image that shows them what it is.
Day, you know what I mean?
You bought a replica car. Joke or serious?
No, seriously. In the early hours of the morning, drinking, you know. And because I like my cars and we're doing the Cannonball Run. And we're just chatting to this guy. And he was, I have a Formula One replica car.
What?
I was showing his picture. It looks like the reason. I brought it to a car show a few years ago. And of course, you have the rope around. Everyone's looking at us. Where'd you get it? Yeah, that was Lewis Hamilton's car back in 2008. That's the one that won the world champion. Is it? What'd you pay for it? 12 million. Did you? And they believe you. I paid $12,000 for it. Like.
So it's a full replica. Someone built an exact
model.
You'd
think it was the real thing.
$12,000? Just that's not bad.
It's great. Yeah. But I love unusual things like that. You know?
What's the crack? I saw a photo of you in front of robots.
That'd be the Transformers.
Of course it
again,
would, yeah.
It was the Top Gear Motor Show in Dublin. That must be 20 years ago, you know. And here's this guy with Bumblebee and Optimus Prime and a whole lot of small, like they're 3 meters tall, these things. And I was like, I had to ask him, what's the story? And he says, well, he's married to this girl from Thailand. It was a great story because I went to Thailand, he said, to a wedding and I was best man. And when I was there, I met a girl, fell madly in love and I married her. And he says, her family make these things out of recycled motorbike parts in the shed at the back of the house. So he got involved in the business. So here's Bumblebee and Optimus Prime that are made out of recycled motorbike parts. And
what was the business? You're selling them like?
No, I went away and I couldn't stop thinking about them because they were so unusual. You know, I ended up going back to him. I said, will you sell the two big ones? So I think I gave $20,000 for the two of them or something, you know.
Well, just for the crack.
Yeah. And the lads were laughing at me because, you know, he had to go and make them. So I didn't get them for about 6 months. And they were, she loved you a long time. You know, you'll never see that again. And sure enough, she showed up. The husband and wife showed up with the two of them.
And what did you do with them?
Sure, we have them. They're up in Donegal in the showroom at the minute. And I say, people come in and take photos with their kids. And sure, they're in the environment then. And if they want to shed 5 years, they're like, do you remember Steeltech with the robots?
That's,
you know. And of course, we put the Steeltech logo in front of them. So every time someone takes a photo, there's the logo, you know. So
what's the maddest thing you've ever bought?
the maddest thing. I mean, in the early hours of the morning when you're on the beer, you know, you don't know what you'll... I've come home with cars more often than not. You know, I remember coming home, bought a horse. Didn't even like horses.
A horse.
Yeah, so... yeah, you just... like, I went to a car auction once and I bought my first Lamborghini Murcielago. I really wanted a Lamborghini. And this was it was an auction in Northern Ireland. It was the biggest ever drug dealer in the UK. He was caught with £500 million worth of cocaine on his private yacht. So he had all these toys, including a Lamborghini Murcielago. So I bought that. And it was... it wasn't a good buy. You know, it looked beautiful, no doubt about it, but it was a disaster.
Boy.
They just keep breaking down, you know. So, and then eventually...
the roads of tune were not meant for a Lamborghini.
No, no, eventually then I'm selling it. You know, this guy comes from the UK to buy it. And he looked at me. I said, oh, Jesus, do you know the story with the car? And I said, yeah, yeah, it was belonged to the biggest ever drug dealer.
One careful lady owner, I think is the answer there.
No, there's a little bit more to the story than that. And I was, what? And he says, well, yeah, the guy that owned it was on holidays. And one of his right-hand men borrowed the car to show off to a girlfriend, but he didn't tell his boss he was taking the car. Didn't he crash the car? The boss was coming back, head of the drug cartel, is coming back after a week, and he said, I'm going to be killed for stealing his car. I have 1 week to fix the car. So it'd take a month to get the parts in. So he went to another guy who had an identical white Lamborghini Murcielago. He said, sorry about this, but I'm going to have to steal your car. Now, I'd prefer to do it with your permission. You'll get the insurance, everything else. Or else I have to have it. I need the parts. And anyways, so he steals the other car, takes all the parts off and puts them onto what's now my Lamborghini Murcielago. It's not a great job, but the boss comes back from his and he never knows that the car was stolen. So the car was poorly put together. Then when the police take all his possessions, they pull the car apart, thinking that there's cocaine hidden in the car or whatever, you know. I always thought I'd be changing the tires someday and they'd be full of cocaine. As it happened to work, you know. But the car was a disaster. It just kept breaking down, you know.
Is that the maddest thing you've ever bought?
It was different. Yeah, it was different. So I sold that. But yeah, so.
So where are we now? 2025, Steeltech, what's happening?
Right now it's modular homes. You know, okay. That's such an exciting place to be because we're at them now 7-8 years. You know, we're doing 4 or 5 a week at the moment.
A week?
Yeah, we'd love to get that up to 100. Which we can do. We're building a new factory. You know, we're ready to start inside the next 2 months. Planning, everything is got. The ground is prepared. We'd hope to have that built. It took about a year to build it. A lot of new machinery to go into that. So the government are talking about it. They said they're going to introduce it. We're waiting for them to just do it.
Introduce what?
Basically, and it's not unique to Ireland or the Irish government, it's been done in California about 10 years ago. They have a huge housing problem there. They give permission for people to put a small modular building in their back garden without having to go for planning permission. Because we all know there's a housing crisis in the country. The problem is simple. You can talk about it nonstop, but in one word, it's planning. That's the problem.
Mm.
And it's a serious problem. So... if the government agrees, at the moment you can put a 40 square metre extension on the back of your house.
Yeah.
If they do this, you can now put a 40 square metre standalone in your back garden.
Amazing.
It makes sense because you have the services there.
Complete
the water
sense.
Is there, the sewage is there, the power is there.
Yeah.
Now, it has to be done to standards. Yeah, it has to comply with fire regulation, with insulation. It has to. You can't just throw every kind of shack up in the
back. Of course, but it's so doable, though.
It's so
logical going, it must meet, here's the list of 50 standards it must meet. Tick, 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 tick. Okay. That can be bought and that can be put on your land. It's just the planning is a killer. Oh, it doesn't meet this regulation in Wicklow, but in Westmeath it does. But in Nina, and you're like, lads.
But the problem I have is, like, we live in a democracy and we voted for certain politicians to form a government. Like, we didn't vote for planners. So the government are the people that make it. They're supposed to be in charge. They're supposed to make the decision. So stop making excuses. Like, just change the law.
If you could, what would be your thing to housing in the morning? If you're like, right, I'm going to, for 1 week, for 1 year, I'm in charge of the housing in Ireland. This is what I'm doing.
The interesting thing is it's so easy to solve the housing crisis. If you look back, 1960 was the year that the Irish government built the most houses. They built 12,500 houses in 1960 when we had no money. The population was about 2.5 million. Population now is double that. So that's equivalent to building 25,000 houses a year. If the government built 25,000 houses a year, that would cost $5 billion at $200,000 a house. If they did that for 4 years, that would be 100,000 houses. Now, then let the developers go off and do their thing instead of saying to the developer, you have to give 20% of your houses to the government. Like, that's stupid. If you're building houses in Hoth and each house is €1 million, why would you be giving away 20%?
It never made sense.
You know,
to me.
Just let the developer do their thing. The government just needs to get out of the way and do what they used to do. And they can come up with all the excuses. They can't say they don't have money. We have surplus money. We have more money than we ever had.
So what's the problem? Planning and then government actually building? Or do you think modular homes?
Who has more land in the whole country? Who owns most? The government. They can even compulsory purchase land if they have to. So they have the land. We have more land per head of population in Ireland than anywhere else in Europe. We have loads of land. We have a population of just over 5 million. That's the same size population live in Singapore. Singapore is the size of County Louth. We could handle 100 million people there. So just keep it real. Go back to building houses like you used to. 25,000 houses a year. There's the money. There's the land. There's the planning solved. Now where are you going to get the people? We don't have the people. How about you go to the Philippines where you have 100 million people that speak English, that have the same religion, that they're not that different, and say, we'll give you visas to all the tradespeople. Let's bring over 50,000 people, right? Where are they going to live? Let's buy camper vans. Let's buy mobile homes. Let's whatever. This is doable.
Yeah, it is doable.
Right? And let's say the government, let's just say somebody, was it Michael O'Leary said that too many school teachers, right? I have a thing about school teachers. Ray Nolan on the pod said that he went off on it.
He was like, oh, don't get me started on politicians. Sure, I was only dying to get him started because I knew it would be a great clip.
Yeah. So let's just say the politicians don't care about housing, which a lot of them don't, right? But what do they care about getting re-elected, right? So the life cycle of the government is 4 years. So you build 25,000 houses each year for 4 years. You've just, so now you can say, oh, we're going to build 30,000 houses this year, including the private sector. We've built 100,000 houses, right?
Hard enough
to get
re-elected on that.
The private sector are now let off a leash, and they're building houses. And all of a sudden, because we're going to build 40,000 houses is no good. They won't even build 40,000 houses. Mm. That's no good. Every year, it gets worse by at least 20,000 houses, because we'll build 30,000, we needed 50,000. If that happens over 10 years, that's a shortfall at 20,000 each year. For 10 years, it's 200,000 houses. So let's build 100,000. Let the government build 100,000 houses. There's the money. There's the people. There's the land. There's the planning.
But with the modular thing you talked about, surely that's the solution, right? If you could combine that with the modular thing you're talking about.
Yeah, and they're afraid of modular building. And when you look at regulation, I mean, they want us to build houses one block on top of another. Like, that's going back to a black and white TV.
It does feel
you
a bit.
You build houses in factories.
Yeah.
And I'm not just trying to, obviously, I want to promote Steeltech modular buildings. Now, what we specialise in really is one-off housing. So there's loads of other companies out there that do modular buildings. But a Steeltech modular home goes up in one day. One day.
That's wild. Like.
And that's...
I love watching those YouTube videos of people putting together those timber and modular homes. The truck arrives, shoop, goes together like Lego, and the roof is going on the next day. And you're like, "That's the future!" Like, there's no five bricklayers needed. Oh, Jimmy's been on the beer; he's not in on a Monday. Oh, we've ran out of stuff there. Just slow. It's backbreaking to build a house in Ireland. Like,
it's really going back to the black and white TV, one block on top of another. It's just. And the thing is like, that steel house, how long will that last? Well, let's look at the concrete houses. Look at the houses up in Donegal and where they're falling down after 10 years. Like, you get a home bond guarantee of 10 years with your new concrete house. You'll get a 20-year structural guarantee with a steel house. There's a friend of mine who's an engineer, one of the best engineers I've ever met in my life. And he said about 15 years ago, he's seen the first ever steel house. He said, this is the best house I've ever seen. And the company went bankrupt 6 months later because it didn't comply with regulation.
Yeah.
In the meantime... You have timber framed houses, you have concrete houses. Steel is superior, and that's a fact. And it's also considerably cheaper. Like, you could have a 3-bedroom Steeltech modular home for less than $100,000. You know, and of course.
But for a family, that's doable. Like, you're not putting yourself in debt for 500, 600 grand.
It is. And I think a lot of young people, and I was like that myself, of course, now, you know, as I say, I'm 65 and I have a lot more wisdom, but you're 30 years of age. you know, and you get a house and you get a mortgage for 400,000.
Mm.
It's going to take you 30 years to pay that off.
And how much are you paying back? You're paying back multiples
like
of that.
There's a one lady I know, and she's living in a Steeltech modular home. 4-year mortgage. 4 years is paid.
Amazing. So,
and she says, her exact words were, we don't believe in keeping up with the Joneses. And we have 3 holidays a year. And we're starting a family. And we're not stuck for money. We're not watching the pennies. We don't have a big fancy 2,500 square foot house. We have a, I think it's 900 square foot.
But that's still big.
But it's
like,
perfect.
You don't
only
need
problem
it.
Is,
like...
It's too warm. You know? So, yeah, the housing crisis.
Well, we just solve it there.
It's easy to solve it.
What else are you getting excited about right now? What's kind of like, what's getting you, we started, how we're going to end. What's getting you buzzed up in 2025?
I suppose I love entrepreneurship, which is, you know, I enjoy chatting to yourself, Gary, about entrepreneurship. And there's, you know, we started another business about a year ago. It's called Urban Offices. And like everything else I ever started, it started by accident. We have a showroom down in Cork. Our neighbor was selling cars. He moved out. So there's all this extra space. And I said to one of the lads with me, what will we do with this space? You know, we don't want to rent it out. We want to use it. And he said, well, we manufacture offices. How about we put offices into it and rent them out? So we put in 16 offices. We call it Urban Offices. They're all rented out, and that's bringing in 100,000 a year.
Yes.
Simple. So we're opening a second Urban Offices in Athlone, another one in Galway, and we'll keep doing that around the country and in the world.
That,
you know?
Could, be
so
the next, that could be the next
business.
Big thing. Like,
and it's called Work Close to Home. So it's not work at home, it's not going to the office, it's work near home.
I like that. Yeah.
And of course, the person have access to their own private office. So it's a bit like, you know, if you live in an apartment versus a house, house, you have your own front door. Here, you have your own front door for your office. Work near home. That's, you know, it's a simple business. And I think it'll work.
I think
another
so too.
Thing is a chain of car wash. It's always, I always want to open one shop and then a chain of them. So another one's a chain of car washes. So we're hoping to open the first one soon in Galway. And it's called Seven. And the reason I call it Seven, I'm just one day, I want to get the car washed and it's 8:45 and there's nowhere open. They all open at 9 and they close at 6. And I'm like...
Work hours. I always find that weird as well, because you can't get a car washed. And then the weekend, there's 20 cars deep and you're like, I'm not sitting in that.
Yeah, I'm not queuing up here. So I just like, we call it Seven. So it'll open at 7 in the morning, close at 7 in the evening, open 7 days a week and we charge €7.
But, simple.
Yeah. And a nice logo, and you know, the average car wash is €10, and they dry the car. Never, we won't dry the car. We simply wash the car in and out. €7, cheap and cheerful
for £7. That's
because you're going to be washing the car again in 4 days' time. Because you know, so that's another thing. You know, and this time tomorrow I'll have another idea. You know, so it's I have a notice board, a whiteboard in my office, and I had to just write on the board, just say no, because I have to.
After this episode, we're going to get bombarded with new ideas.
Which everybody tells me is a bad idea. I've recently bought a restaurant. Now
that does sound like a terrible idea.
Yeah, it is, but I'm just going to rent it out, but have a little bit of input, because I'm just a huge believer in customer service, and I don't think people just go out for dinner. I think when they go out, they want to be entertained, they want to be treated properly. It's not just, it's a whole experience.
Yeah, it's not fuel, especially now, I think people are going out less because it's quite expensive. And now if you do go out, you want it to be really nice. You want it to be an experience as opposed to like, yeah, it's grand.
Yeah. And everyone said it's a bad idea, which of course drives me more, you know, so.
Sounds like not a bad idea. Sounds like a terrible idea. But sure, we'll get you back on in 2 years and we'll talk about it. Going, how's that restaurant? Would you believe it's now a car wash?
Yeah.
Enterprise Ireland helps to support and fund a vibrant startup ecosystem, providing supports, insights, and network connections to the most ambitious Irish startups. From expert advice to raising funding, exploring opportunities in international markets, to strategic planning, Enterprise Ireland is here to support you in those important startup moments. For more information about how Enterprise Ireland can support you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Enterprise Ireland, helping Irish startups go global.
Right, quick fire round. What book would you recommend every entrepreneur read?
Yeah, there's one book everyone has to read, but I'm just going to start with, depending on what age. So my kids, I made them read Rich Dad, Poor Dad at the age of 10. Right? It's a simple enough book, but there's great lessons in it. Then at the age of 20, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I think that's a book for everybody.
It's unreal.
Yeah, it's just these 7 habits. You just do these 7 habits, you'll have a great quality of life. Forget about entrepreneurship. Just do the 7 habits. You know, and then there's your competitor, The Diary of a CEO. Is it his 33 Rules for Life or something? for someone starting a business, I think that's an essential book.
Okay, we're gonna bleep that one out. That'll not make the cut anyway.
For someone starting a business, it's just a good book. But I call it the Bible, and I'm sure other people have recommended it. And I'm not recommending this book. I am saying if you have a business, you have to have this book. And it's called Good to Great by Jim Collins. So Jim Collins writes this book. It's a carefully researched book of like the top 20 companies in the world over a long period of time and what they have in common.
We're going to give away a copy of that book. So if you want to win a copy of that book and be in a chance to win it, share this episode on social media, tag The Entrepreneur Experiment and Steel Tech, and you'll be having a chance to win that book. That is such a ringing endorsement. We have to try to get that in the hands of people.
It's essential. It's not, as I say, I'm not recommending it. I'm saying you have
mandatory.
You have to read this book.
What's something you'd learn the hard way?
That's a tricky one because, yeah, one of the things I've had to learn the hard way is that there are sharks out there and you cannot trust everybody. And I've been caught so many times. And sometimes it's people you know. And it just, sometimes you help people. This has happened so not just once or twice. You go out of your way to help someone and that person will take your kindness. They will take advantage of it. And it's kind of sad, you know, and I've been caught so many times for money and I always forgive the people, but I don't forget. And it's like, ah, Jesus, you know, I've had to learn that the hard way.
How do you know? How do you figure that out? Because that's...
It's hard to know.
One.
I mean, I'm talking about people that I would, you know, even in the past, people I would have been friendly with, you know, and sometimes people cannot help it. I have one guy, and I'd say serious 50 grand at least, went up his nose in cocaine, you know, and I actually really liked the lad. He was really intelligent. And I really felt sorry for him when he was leaving. And he had an addiction. He couldn't help it. So I can forgive him. But, other people, maybe they have gambling addictions. Maybe they're just, you know, people think, oh, you've loads of money. You're doing well. You won't miss 20 grand here. You know, I'll borrow. You know, if somebody wants to borrow money off you, you know, sometimes you should say, do you know what? I won't loan you money. I'll give you the money on the condition you never ask me again. Because when you lend someone money, all of a sudden, you're the bad guy.
I don't think I've rarely heard a story where it works out well.
Yeah. I think that's how the Jews got into banking. I could be wrong, but they had... the idea was that if in the Jewish community, and I want to borrow money off you, Gary, well, I don't want to hurt your feelings by giving you money because then you'll be obliged. So I'll give you the money, but you pay me 10%. And now it's a business deal.
Yeah.
I think that's the original foundation of banking.
Because especially between friends, then it instantly changes the narrative. It's like in the business with your good friends, very rarely works out very well. Yeah. You always have to like have that separation of like church and state.
I'm a big believer a problem is an opportunity. You know.
What have you sacrificed for your success?
I always look back and I don't have any regrets, but I suppose sacrificed. I've divorced twice. So, you know, had I a regular 9-to-5 job, I might have put more effort into the relationship. You know, when you get divorced, a lot of people, it was always her fault or his fault. But when I look back, I'd have to take a lot of the credit for not working out because I wasn't there. You know, I didn't realize you're supposed to bring your partner out for dinner and you're supposed to go on holidays and you're supposed to do things together. Sure, I was focused. I'm making money here for the, you know, and I neglected in both times, you know, so that'll be one of them, yeah.
What'd you do today if I give you 10 million euro?
Jesus, there's one thing, I love making money. I love spending money. I'd have great fun with 10 million. I'd have no problem spending it. I'd probably put 5 or 6 million into the new business, the new factory, because we're building a factory. It's going to cost at least 5 million with new machines and everything. I'd put 5 or 6 million into that. I'm going to Tanzania with a group of about 15 entrepreneurs in June. It was organized by Paddy Finn, a great good friend of mine, great entrepreneur. You should get him on the podcast. What he said to me was, it was a great sales pitch. He said, last year, I went to Vegas to see U2 and the Spear, is that what they call it?
Yeah.
And he said, I went to Abu Dhabi to see a Formula One race. And I went to Uganda with World Vision, where I met a child that I sponsored a few years ago. It's like 30 euros a month. You sponsor this child to go to school. And Uganda was the thing that really... I enjoyed the most. It was a wonderful experience. And his wife went with him and said it was great. So he has organized about 15 entrepreneurs to go to Tanzania with World Vision. So I'm going over with them. like, we had a few Zoom calls, and I'm like, what can we do? And I straight away thought, wait a minute, Steeltech make modular buildings.
Oh, amazing.
How about we make a school?
And oh, then I got, class.
Yeah, and then I got into a friend of mine who's in the logistics business. I said, how we get it over to Tanzania? He said, yeah, it'll take about 8 weeks. Gosh, about 10 grand. So I was like, okay, we easily manufacture it. Yeah. We get it delivered. A few lads fly over. We put this school together. You know, that's...
Love it.
And
that's like, proper
yeah, but
problem solving. That's doing something that changes things.
Like. Yeah, he said, look, he's organized about 10 or 15 entrepreneurs. I'm not sure how many, going over in June to see what an entrepreneurial mindset, what can we do?
Yeah, problem
you know,
solve.
So I'd, you know, and you're sponsoring a child. It's really cool. And I'm sponsoring a child as well. So you get to meet the child. So if you just, I put back to the 10 million, I put 5 million into the business. I put... maybe 3 or 4 million into that. You could probably educate a couple of thousand kids for that. Imagine that.
What mad thing would you buy though as well?
Oh yeah.
Because like, you're the king of mad things. I'm come on, give me something wild.
I'm going to squander 1 million on myself.
What are you buying?
Back in the tiger economy, I was getting a few helicopter lessons. And of course I forgot about it.
So of course you were.
I'm going to buy a helicopter. So that's going to be 600-700 grand. And then I'm going to buy a supercar. But this time I'm going to buy a brand new one. It doesn't break down all the time. So, yeah, I'd blow 1 million on myself.
I don't know what's the worst investment, the helicopter or the restaurant. I'm going to give you 1 million. You can only invest in one person or one other company. Who is it?
I'd probably have to go with, and I think somebody else said the same. Did you have him on the podcast, Will O'Brien?
Yeah.
Young guy, yeah. Ulysses. I'd be very friendly with his father.
Great guy.
But... and his father is a cool guy. He was recently nominated for Person of the Year in Cork and he came second. So it's in the genes. But the business, Ulysses, I don't know anything about it, but it sounds amazing. You know, he's got this underwater robots planting seeds that will grow seagrass that's great for the environment. It sounds amazing.
Oh, I had him on the pod. And he's exceptional. Podcast. Yeah. He's a very different human. He's one of those just different humans. You kind of go, yeah, whatever you're in, I'm in. Whatever you're doing, don't care. I don't even care what it is. I'm in. No, I agree with you. Okay.
Knowing his father as well as I do, he couldn't be normal. You know, so I've got to give him 1 million, yeah.
If you're starting from zero again in 2025, you've none of your capital, you've nothing, what would you do?
If you're starting from zero, I'd probably have to look at the trades because I think, you know, in 5-10 years' time, the plumber or the electrician will be making more money than the surgeon. But great plumbers and great electricians are not often great business people. So I might create a business where I'm the middleman, putting all of these people together. So if you need a plumber, you won't have to wait a week or a month, but you'll pay a premium, you know, and I'll just take a slice of that. So I will organize, yeah. I'll be the salesman and the marketing guy, and I'll get all these guys and it'll be, you know, profit sharing.
I'll go 50-50 with you on that. That's the idea I have. Like I bought a house 5.5 years ago and I've spent 5.5 years doing it up, getting repairs done and it breaks. And obviously I was in property before that. So it breaks your heart dealing with tradesmen at times.
And sometimes they don't charge enough.
They don't charge enough, no. But it's not even that. It's just getting the good one. I found a good plumber now and I would pay him three times the premium. I would pay him anything. So the idea is here, I'll go one step further with you. So you start an apprenticeship scheme, you bring them in, they're 18, you train them up, you say, right, just stick with me for 5 years, going to give you a contract. You bring in, you buy up a load of plumbers and electricians, you build the whole thing, uniforms, online booking. There's the thing. You're talking about 7?
Yeah.
Sunday afternoon, I'm sitting there and I'm like, never rang your man. Now I've got to wait till Monday morning. Do I remember to ring him on Monday morning? No, I do not. I remember next Sunday when I'm sitting there going, never rang the plumber.
Yeah.
Online booking. Here's the options. A couple of simple options. This, this, and this. Cool. Bang. There you go. We'll go in on that one 50-50. The electrician thing is going to be called Sparks, by the way.
That's not a bad name.
There you go. I'm giving away all my secrets here. What do you believe other people find strange or strongly disagree with?
Yeah, that's probably my favorite question because I have a couple of them even coming in this morning. I thought of something. I was like, how easy would it be to solve the traffic problem? And this, like, every day I drive to Toom from Galway. So when I go through Clare Galway, there's a backlog in Clare Galway of maybe it's a 2 kilometer backlog of traffic. And because I was in Vietnam and in Hanoi, there's 11 million population. There's no public transport. There's 8 million motorbikes and the traffic moves. Because there's mostly no traffic lights. You know, it's a bit extreme. But in Vietnam, the cars are on top of each other. Right? So go back to Clare Galway. Finally, the lights go green and the car moves. And then there's 3 car spaces and then there's another car. And then there's 3 car spaces and there's another. If they all tightened up a bit, You know, so instead of saying go slow, I'm going to say go fast. Just move. When the lights change, that will... Anyway, that's a small one. The main one would really be, everybody thinks we should have more Gardaí on the street. I think we should have no Gardaí on the street. And you only have to go to Singapore, because I did a tour over there. And I was like, you have no crime. And I haven't seen a single police person. I said, how's that? Because we have cameras everywhere. So the idea of two guards walking up and down the street is ridiculous. You have cameras everywhere and you're a couple of undercover guards on motorbikes. So if there's an incident and someone's looking on the cameras, now they're seeing the whole city, not just the 100 yards this way and that way. Then there's a cop there in a minute. So...
Tchoum. Cameras and tchoum.
Yeah.
What's been your worst investment?
The worst investment? Well, like everybody else, I bought a couple of houses, and it was funny, back in 2007... And a friend of mine bought three houses. I bought two houses in the same estate. And the conversation we had at the time was, will we buy them all? 100 houses, you know? Which the bank were coming out giving us money. You didn't have to go to the bank door. How much do you want? You know? And it was like, thank God we didn't buy the whole estate. You know, but I bought one house with 270,000. I sold it for 45,000. The other one I still have. That was a bad investment, you know, but... I bought log cabins about 20 years ago, and they were poor quality, and every one of them leaked. So that was a heartbreak. And going into the UK, well, that was a pretty bad investment as well, but an awful lot more good than bad, fortunately.
What's been your best investment?
Best investment is probably Steeltech. Everything apart from our going into the UK, everything else has just worked out really well. So it's gone extremely well and continues to grow. So, yeah.
What's your final piece of advice to every founder or aspiring founder listening?
There's so much advice. You know, I can give at this stage of my life, but we're in Philippines and Vietnam there in January. I'm a big believer in taking a holiday once a month. So in December, I had my 65th birthday party in Tenerife, and my mother was there, who's 92 this Brilliant. Year, and she's just the wisest person you ever met. But we were just chatting, and myself and my partner were saying, yeah, we're going to the Philippines and Vietnam in January, and there's a couple beside us. And said, why don't you come with us? And they were both semi-retired, like, and plenty of money. And they were like, oh, I don't know. Well, I'd have to. And my mother leaned over and said, just go. And they went. And that's why they went. And they loved it. You know, so just do it. I'm a huge believer in first principles, Elon Musk's, you know, first principles. And that applies to everything in life. And it's just do it. Like, just don't be waiting for the perfect moment, the perfect idea. Just do it. Just do something. And you know, if it fails, all the better. You learn from it. And 8 out of 10 times, it probably will fail. But look at the experience. Look at the knowledge. Look at everything you will learn. And when it works, it'll be amazing.
Amazing. Yeah. Sean, thank you so much. Where can people learn more about you and Steeltech?
Well, I suppose steeltechsheds.ie, steeltechmodularhomes.ie, Sean Brett's on LinkedIn, the usual. So, yeah. So everybody needs a shed, or nowadays, everybody needs a home. We look after you.
Love it. Get the pitch in at the end. Sean, you're a gent. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Gary. Enjoy it.